The Glimpse.
My favorite joke about Carl Phillips is that, like, he knows more about a comma than I know all about the English language, yeah. Right? The way he could stretch out a sentence and just build clause upon clause where it's just, like, all grammatically correct and, like, the clauses are all doing something interesting mm-hmm. and different. Like, sometimes it's surprise, sometimes it's acknowledgement, sometimes it's, like, dismissals.
Welcome to The Glimpse. I'm your host, Camille Rankin. Hafeza Jeter likes a comma and loves a good line break. She's a Nigerian-American poet, writer, teacher, and a literary agent. She's the author of the poetry collection, Un-American, and her debut memoir, The Black Period, won the 2023 Penn Open Book Award. She's our guest today on The Glimpse. Hafeza Jeter's poetry moves with a surprising stealth, burrowing into the marrow of family, love, and loss, troubling relationships between people and land and nation, and tugging at the tether that binds the living and the dead. In her debut poetry collection, Un-American, she reveals truths so acute, so intimate, we catch our breath. Her language is smooth and soft and sharp, a lush instrument that leaves behind the gentlest bruise, an ache that reminds us we are human and alive. Welcome, Hafeza. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much, Camille. I'm thrilled to be here.
So you've been in the world of prose for a while, right? You just had your book come out, The Black Period, which I highly recommend. Everyone should be reading that for sure. An incredible work of nonfiction. So do you miss us in poetry? You're going to come back?
Yes. First of all, I'm a poet first.
Yeah.
But because I think that, you know, there's a reason people love it when poets write prose.
We do love it.
Right? It's the attention to language. But I think that, like, you know, poetry is where, like, I keep my knife sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's a challenge. But I think that I hope to always be a poet for the attention it gives you to language, for what you have to do, like, just on the emotional core. And I think that if there's ever a place you have to learn to trust the reader, it's poetry.
Yeah, that's true. There is a lot of trust there, I think. I mean, there's so much space when you are moving away from the sentence. You know, there's so much space left between you and the reader that you're like, meet me here.
Yes. And it's about trusting the reader with a gap that, you know, you essentially build the other side of the bridge, and you trust that what the reader has inside of them will create the bridge under their feet to get you to the next point. And that's something that I've, like, always thought about, like, as I write line breaks, because I think line breaks are one of my favorite parts of a poem, because it's like a Swiss Army knife. It's just like, actually, this is three poems in one. Pick which one you want.
So what do you feel like poetry can do that prose can't do?
I think that, like, that in poetry, there is, I feel like that there's a very unique relationship between the writer of poetry and the reader that allows poetry to have a one-to-one relationship with almost every single reader. And it's just like, yes, we all understand that, versus, like, like, with some nonfiction, it's just like, well, this is what this is about, you know?
Right, right. All right, let's talk about your poem. Can you tell us the poem that you're going to share today?
Sure. So this poem was published in Poem a Day. And, like, I had no new poems, but, like, I'm just like, I got to come up with something. And so this is, like, my first attempt to be writing after, like, my poetry book came out and after my nonfiction book came out. Essentially, like, the one and only poem I've written since, like, the book.
So this is you dipping your toe back in.
This is me trying. Mm-hmm. And, like, nothing like a deadline to make you rise to the occasion.
So will you read it for us?
Nope. Just kidding.
Please.
Praise song. After she died, I'd catch her stuffing my nose with pine needles and oak, staring off into the shadows of early morning, me too jet-lagged for the smells a ghost leaves behind. the tailor of histories. My mother sewed our black Barbies and Kens, Nigerian clothes. Her mind so tight against the stitching that, in precision, she looked mean as hell too. My mother's laugh was a record skipping, so deep she left nicks in the vinyl. See, even in death, she wants to be fable. I don't know what fathers teach sons, but I'm moving my mother to a land where grief is no longer gruesome. She loved Top 40, yacht rock, driving in daylight with the wind, wah-wahing through her cracked window, like Allah blowing breath over the open bottleneck of our living. She knew 99 names for God, and yet, how do I remember her as what no God could make?
Thank you. Like, I feel like this poem, Praise Song, it feels like an elegy that refuses the elegiac. Like, it feels like it's really happening more in a space of joy.
Yeah. In grief, you can forget how funny your parents are, especially, like, anyone with, like, immigrant parents, as you know. Like, the literal just, like, idiosyncrasies that they have. Like, you know, like, my mom loved Oprah and McDonald's apple pie, you know? She loved Yacht Rock so much. She loved Yacht Rock.
Yacht Rock, that's a great detail. Like, it's, like, what? Like,
yeah.
But then when you listen to Yacht Rock, you know what? I'm like, I get it. I get it.
Yeah. But in the meantime, she was, like, buying black Barbies and Kens and literally stitching them Nigerian clothes to replace with, you know? It was the time when, like, you know, you had to go to, like, 14 different places to find the black Barbie. Like, Afrocentricism was, like, all the rage. I also, like, appreciated just the way that, you know, immigrants stitched their lives together, like, for their children. Yeah. Like, we often think that, like, as the children of immigrants, like, we're the ones who do all the assimilation. But, like, our parents are doing it in ways, too, that are beyond the ways that break our heart, like, not giving us their language. And we're all still mad about that. But, like, that's a form of assimilation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that there's also a sense in the poem of, your mother appears in the poem not just as, like, a ghost in the romantic sense. Like, you know, people are always talking about ghosts, like, they're in their nightgowns holding, like, a candle and they're floating. Like, there's an audacity about her presence, which I really enjoy. I think that's rare to me to see that kind of haunting, and I really appreciated that. And I feel like it goes hand in hand with that sense of not exactly letting go, but, like you said, it described it as, like, getting clear. Mm-hmm. And I love that moment in the poem when you say that you're moving your mother to a land where grief is no longer gruesome. Like, there's such a relief in that, and it feels like it's a mercy for both of you.
Yeah, because, like, so many of, like, just, like, the way emotions are talked about, the way it's also talked about through, like, very patriarchal and masculine lens, and so there's always, like, the violence of the experience, you know? And it's just, like, I don't want this to feel so bloody anymore.
Does that connect back to the title that you chose? Like, can you talk about that choice of Praise Song for the frame for this poem?
Yeah, because, like, you know, I feel like poets, like, and titles, you know, whenever, like, prose writers are just, like, titles are so hard, I'm just like, now do it 55 times. Like, you know? For one book. For one book. Like, it is truly, like, a title is truly an important and instructive thing. But I was also thinking of just, like, you know, there's the traditional ideas of, like, praise songs and how lofty they are. And so, like, whenever we think of, like, reverence, there's always something, like, inaccessible and, like, otherworldly of this. And it's just, like, want to make it as not, like, mundane, but as just, like, as everyday.
In a way, the mundane here is elevated to the space of the divine by the form, but also kind of makes us understand that, you know, I think I was talking to another poet, Amakoja, who said that maybe we're living heaven and hell all the time. It's happening on earth all the time. And so in a way, it kind of reframes those experiences as the divine that maybe we hadn't thought about that way before. And I think that's,
yeah. And, like, I think that there is something just, like, trying to expand our notion of divinity, because just, like, I think there is something, like, divine both in, like, pleasure and in, like, something more transcendent that when you say yacht rock, we all have the same feeling.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
That, like, we could all connect that, like, that, yes, it's hilarious, but also, like, Footloose is an amazing soundtrack. You know, Kenny Loggins.
You know?
Perfection, mm-hmm. You know?
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Something can't be denied. You know? Yeah, and like this joy of being like that, like, because so much of being like a Black person or an immigrant is so serious.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I remember like when Green Day is like the album that had like Time of Your Life mm-hmm. on it, when that like album, my mother loved that album. Like, whenever those songs came on the radio, she's like, shh. And she also like loved Shaggy, It Wasn't Me.
Yeah, I love that collection of things that feel like contradictory. I feel like that's very much immigrant parent experience. You're like this and yes. that? Really? Okay.
Sure. Yeah, yes, exactly.
Definitely. All right, let's take a little break. And when we come back, we can talk about Carl Phillips and what he is up to.
We hope you're enjoying The Glimpse. It's just one small part of the Adrian Brinkerhoff Poetry Foundation.
We're the founders, Peter.
And Kathy Halstead. Our goal is to make poetry more accessible to everyone, and we do that in a variety of ways. Through partnerships, our film series, this podcast, and our website, brinkerhoffpoetry.org.
We hope these works will lure you into a parallel universe, the way a Möbius strip brings you into another dimension without leaving the page you're on. Thanks for listening.
All right, we are back, and we're going to talk about Carl Phillips, and I'm going to make you explain how he works, right? That's the agreement. How does he do it?
Click.
How does he do it?
Click.
All right, so tell us about the poem that you brought. What are you going to read for us?
So the poem I brought for Show and Tell is a poem by Carl Phillips, who is like my favorite poet ever, and it's from his book Silver Chest. It's called "So the Mind Like a Gate Swings Open." And what do you want to know about it, Camille?
Well, I guess I want to hear you read it, and then we can. And I want to know everything about it.
All right.
After that.
Okay. No pressure. So the mind, like a gate, swings open. When it comes to what, eventually it must come to. Don't forget to say to yourself, has it come to this again already? Look a little lost, maybe, but unsurprised. Sometimes it feels like being a carousel horse, but with all the paint gone strange-like, all the wood gone driftwood. All the horses I've corralled inside me, set free. Confused now, because now what? The snow fell like hope when it's been forsaken. Just before the wind shifts, then the wind shifts, the snow flies upward. I love you means what, exactly? In the end, desire may turn out to be no different from any other song. Sing and be at last released from it. Not so long ago as I'd like to think, I used to get drunk in parking lots with strangers. We'd park, we'd drink, and didn't think what to call it. The rest that came after. What is a thing like that worth calling? He took me into his arms. He held me. I know longing's a lot like despair. Both can equal everything you've ever hoped for. If that's how you want it, sure, I get that. What's wrong with me? I used to ask. But usually too late, and not meaning it anyway. He touches me, or I touch him, or don't.
All right, Carl.
Glad they gave that man his Pulitzer.
It's about time.
One more year, and I would have had to cuss the whole system
Honestly,
out.
Honestly, it was getting to be, like, conspicuous at this point, you know?
Yeah, like, there was about to be a revolt mm-hmm. among us.
So, Carl Phillips, favorite poet.
Yes.
What about this poem? Like, what draws you to this one in particular?
I think that it's the same thing that draws me to all of his poems, but it always happens so differently each time. Like, my favorite joke about Carl Phillips is that, like, he knows more about a comma than I know all about the English language,
yeah.
right? The way he could stretch out a sentence and just build clause upon clause where it's just, like, all grammatically correct and, like, the clauses are all doing something interesting mm-hmm. and different. Like, sometimes it's surprise, sometimes it's acknowledgement, sometimes it's, like, dismissal, sometimes it's, like, it's kind of like this coy me too. you know, that like, and that I love, and that like, that I've never seen anyone who can twin shame, desire, and just like banal recognition of oneself, you know, and just like, I love you means what
that
exactly?
moment. Like, can you talk about that moment?
Yes.
I was like, I feel like I had been slapped in the face.
Yes.
Especially with that line break, you know, I love you
yes.
means what exactly?
Means what exactly? But like, it blows open the question and both dismisses it in this way that only is something as big as love can be everything and nothing.
Yeah.
You know, it can be something like the currency we like that we will do anything for, and like tissue paper.
It's, you know, it's like the mismatch is
yes.
so delicious
yes.
and like unsettling and hilarious.
Yes. Like, rarely do you see someone like tackle the mania of crush and desire and love in a way that is also like deeply serious, you know, impactful. And I feel like with Carl, that like Carl is never afraid of like the hysteria of desire, of like
yeah.
that, like that desire can make you feel hysterical, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like how he can inhabit on the page when he writes about shame, he inhabits like the visceralness of being inside of it. But by the time you're done with this sentence, you realize that it's over. That like you're someone who's talking about it from a remove, you know, that like in the way he talks about it, like you see the recognition of shame, but he's just like, but we're on the other side, like and maybe not an other side, but he's just so matter of factness of it.
Right.
The, like a person who can talk about shame while invoking shame while not having you feel the shame. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He manages to really utilize the sentence, as you were saying, with perfect correctness, but he also somehow escapes that trap of the poem feeling like an accident of prose in lines. It's just, the sentence is doing poetry.
Yes. So often when people write about desire, it's like precious, you know? But like he like acknowledges that like it's actually pretty embarrassing. And he's just like, this is what vulnerability is and looks like. And at the end of the day, like, I've never read any poet where I can like read so much about desire and shame and feel the opposite by the time I'm done. Because they say that like embarrassment is like a thing that like it comes from inside you. Shame is what others do to you, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's one of the things about this poem, like hearing you talk about his relationship to shame and desire. In this poem, I feel like there's so much casting off. And it's interesting, like there's this kind of examination of release, but the release, it's like, is it liberation? Is it relief? Is it disappointment? I don't know.
It's a shrug.
It's a shrug.
Like, I feel like it's a shrug. It's just like, Carl's walking away, looking back and shrugging over his shoulders and keeps going, you know?
Yes.
And when he talks about shame from his vantage point, you understand that it's something that's done to us.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that when we look at it, we can come at it from like, you know, an overhead view looking down, you know, like this disembodied view, but we still recognize our body in it, like in
yeah.
some way.
Yeah.
Okay. So imagine like a picture of your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then you blow up so you can see all the pixels,
mm-hmm.
right? His poems are able to find one pixel of your heart and be like, boom, that one. You know, in like my truly baby poet years, like I would just like read his work over and over again and just be like, motherfucker, how did he do this?
He
you know,
this?
Even now, like even for like in when I was writing my nonfiction book, whenever I got stuck, I just pull Carl Phillips down and be like, show me something,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's kind of like, you know, like what, how Black people have a meal so good it makes them mad?
Yes, yes.
Like, that's what I feel like Carl Phillips' poem is.
It's honestly the best feeling. I love when I get a,
yes.
I'm reading a poetry book and I'm just like, God damn it. How dare
yeah, I'm
you?
I'm just like, this is outrageous.
I'm like, I want to throw it.
Yes.
I want to turn over a table, yes. just like.
Like, the only time I want to call the cops.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs>
That like you can see like his intelligence moving all through just
yeah.
like the classical education and everything that he knows, but in a way that like never alienates you. That like it's rare that such elevated language and like there's an elevated eye can like not lock you out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at any level.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like that's a big part of the way that he makes poems, and it connects back to what you're talking about with shame and what we take on from the external, and the shrug that he like extends throughout this poem over and over again. You know, I feel like that's connected back to that. Like, you're going to be let into this. Yes, I'm a very smart man, but you're welcome here too.
Like, exactly. Because just like, I know we like, people say like, you know, like the work should like also show you how to read it. Mm-hmm. Like the poem should show you how to read it. Like, sure. But like, Carl's actually does in a very precise way, because like, you get to know how he's using these contradictions to find both like agreement, recognition, shame, all of these things. And so like, I feel like that's part of like why you don't ever feel all locked out of it, because like, even though his like diction and syntax is so like, you know, like you recognize a Carl Phillips poem from a million miles away, like, but like, the moment you start, he's teaching you, like, or not even teaching, he's just showing you that you already know how.
That's a nice way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I feel like Carl Phillips poems are such strange, lovely places to be.
Yeah.
You know, you always feel a little bit like off kilter. It's just like, I don't know, a friend who plays like a clever joke on you every time that you're always into. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
It's like, you got me again, Carl.
You got me again. You got me again. And at the end of the poem, it's always just like, what?
Carl.
Exactly.
All right. So we figured it out. We understand how he does it, or no?
Yes.
Okay,
I think I've explained. I've explained Carl Phillips to the world.
Good job.
Sorry, Carl, your career is over.
He's just going to find a new pixel. So we know that's the truth.
Oh, God. Don't threaten me. Don't threaten me.
Yeah. So what are you up to now? What's your next project?
Well, I'm trying to write a novel, and those are hard. I mean, you literally just have to make up everything.
Yeah.
So we shall see. It's like every poet working on novel. And then like the goal is to slowly try to write another book of poems.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been, as always, a delight. Thank you so much for doing this and for talking to us about your poems and Carl's poem.
Of course. This has been delightful.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Camille Rankin. Hafiz's poem, Praise Song, was first published on Poem A Day. Carl Phillips' poem, So the Mind Swings Open Like a Gate, is from Silverchest, copyright 2013. It was aired with permission from Farrar, Strauss, and Giroux, all rights reserved. Coming up next week, we talk to Chen Chan about petitioning the universe, the joy of tiny ketchup packets, and metaphors for grief. Make sure to like and subscribe to The Glimpse wherever you get your podcasts. You can also find episodes on our website, brinkerhoffpoetry.org. If you have any questions or comments, please drop us an email at theglimpsepoetrypodcast@gmail.com. The Glimpse is a production of the Adrian Brinkerhoff Poetry Foundation. I'm your host, Camille Rankin. Our senior producer is Jennifer Wolfe. Kat Yore is our technical director and mixing engineer. Editorial Director Amanda Glassman is our curator and production coordinator. Amy Holmes is the Foundation's Executive Director, and our co-founders are Kathy and Peter Halstead. Thanks for listening.